have like this ridiculous, goofy, like sci-fi comedy, but they're a black writer, so like why not still give them a chance to do that? Just be, don't, you don't have to make them write about fucking that's, like growing up in a ghetto or growing up in a gentrified area. Like
that's the thing that drives me so bonkers.
Welcome to AZ Uncensored, a podcast brought to you by Arizona Citizens for the Arts, where we seek to build transparency between arts and politics. I'm your new host, Madeline Slotin, and stay tuned.
Once again, welcome to AZ Uncensored. I am your new host, Madeline, and today here we have some awesome folks, the co-founders of Laughing Pig Theater down in Mesa, Arizona. And so we have Taylor and Tony here with us. Welcome, you both. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was looking into your theater and I was amazed by some of the work that you both do. I love that you have this commitment to inclusivity, to be anti-racist, LGBTQI plus friendly, to include those of all abilities, all sizes. So let's just talk a little bit about that. What inspired you to start Laughing Pig? What got you into this work? Yeah, let's start there.
Yeah, so I guess I will start, but I think one of the biggest reasons we started was because in the East Valley, we didn't see a lot of the work that that kind of inspires us in terms of like being theater for social change. That's like something that we really pride ourselves in doing, is doing work that encourages people to have more empathy. Like that's a big theme for us, is empathy. And so we wanted to have a theater company that did a lot more new work, or work that wasn't just like, you know, doing Annie or the things that you would traditionally see in a lot of like bigger theater companies. We wanted to do work that was about the characters and their journey, and a little bit more grounded and real, and sometimes gritty. And so that was kind of the start of it. Tony, do you want to tag on? I'm sure.
Yeah,
you
well,
do.
I mean, we got in a very lucky position because we were teaching theater classes at the Mesa Arts Center a few years ago, and we kind of entered an arrangement with them to use the space that we taught at for our own work if we wanted to. And so that I think was a big catalyst for it. Like we had this incredibly lucky opportunity, like fall right in our lap to use this space. And so we decided, like Taylor said, that we really wanted to try to bring some work that was a little less safe, I guess. That sounds kind of like artsy woo-woo-y, I guess, to say. But like a lot of the stuff in the East Valley is very safe. It's very traditional, like the kind of performance, the kind of theater that you get. It's kind of very clean and like a little bit sanitized sometimes. It's a lot of good work, but it's, again, it's like Taylor said, you don't see stuff making big swings that much. So we wanted to use this opportunity that we had with the space that we had to, I guess, bring in something that was a little bit more thought-provoking, sometimes a little bit more edgy. You know, as we went just like understanding more and more that we also had an opportunity to provide a platform for people who wouldn't necessarily have a platform. So as we kind of developed, we tried to take more and more steps back to kind of let other people have their moment, or to just like use that opportunity for like up and coming performers and stuff who might not have chances other places to really kind of flex their muscles on our stage. That was really important to us.
Yeah. And I think too, like with that is like, we always wanted to create an environment that was like very welcoming and like, where we there anybody could do anything that they wanted to. Like, we consider ourselves like a learning theater, as in professionals and people that have no experience in theater can get involved with us and work with us, and we'll help teach skills, or we'll like learn from them. Like, we think of it more of like a collaborative experience. Granted, like, there are roles still, there are still leadership like positions in terms of like having the hierarchy of a cast, like that still exists, but we think that all of the people that we do employ and we work with are going to like their very first love is like loving collaboration and the use of theater to like use it as like a vessel for like building empathy, for building community, for also for like learning from each other. Like, I think that's something that we expect all of the people that work with us to love too, is like just like loving being there and enjoying each other's company and work and learning. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a good foundation, maybe.
No, that is awesome. And I love the idea of trying to create theater that's not so safe, like you mentioned, Tony, and also like you mentioned, Taylor, of using it as a vessel for whatever it needs to be, you know. Like, I am a lover of theater. That is, theater and music are my personal art mediums, and it's awesome vessel for whatever you need it to be, whether it be change, whether it be therapy, whether it be creating conversation, building community. So I love that willingness to set theater up as a way to be that vessel. And I don't know, I'm just thinking about maybe as with the past summer with Black Lives Matter, with COVID, and with this political tsunami
yeah
that's been 2020, like, how has your work pivoted to be that vessel, I guess, this past year?
Yeah, I mean, when we were first getting started, we were like talking with some friends who were already in the theater about like, you know, how we should go about it and stuff. And I'm always reminded of like a conversation I had where one of our friends just kind of flat out told us like what would be the point of you getting started? Like, what are you doing that needs to be done? Because there's a ton of community theater in the Valley. Like, even if it's not like a huge theater city like Chicago or New York, like, there's just a ton of community level theater all around us. And a lot of the time they're kind of doing similar things, similar ideas. So like, we don't really need just another community theater who like is going to do stuff that's going to cast themselves and like give themselves the parts that they've always wanted and that kind of thing. Like, there really needs to be a point for us to be around, and all the situations that you've been talking about over the last couple of years that have really been coming to light and being exacerbated. Like, I think that was a really wake up call for us to kind of go back to that and be like, all right, so what is the point of us if we're going to say that we deserve to exist just like any of these other theaters? Then why? We have to prove that. And I think that's when it became more important for us to, even though we always considered ourselves people who were trying to give platforms to others, like, to just be explicit about that and to really come forward and say, like, yes, we are going to be explicitly anti-racist. We are going to be explicitly LGBTQIA+ friendly. We're going to be explicitly friendly to performers that are disabled or performers who have different body types or performance levels, any ability levels, anything like that. Because like, just kind of assuming it wasn't working anymore. Like, we and other theaters in town are, like, even though we could all say that they're assuming it, aren't acting on it. So it just became more reason for us to say, like, we have to actually act on this. You have to kind of say the assumptions out loud now, because people are getting away with not doing it because everyone's just assuming that they are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think drawing lines in the sand is really important in terms of, like, you know, equity and that laying that as a foundation as a part of our theater company. I think 2020, 2021, you know, this has been crazy whirlwind in a lot of ways, especially for Laughing Pig. So like bringing it back to like the work that we've been doing in the last year. So unfortunately, we've had some, I mean, just like all nonprofits right now, just like we are a registered 501c3 theater company. But just like all nonprofits, all theater companies, performance-based companies, we're struggling. Realistically, like we have been struggling. We lost our space essentially right at the beginning of COVID because of closing, like the city's cutbacks, because we relied on the city of Mesa, to provide a space for us, basically, like as a our partnership. And we lost that right at the beginning. So one, we haven't had a space, which is a blessing and a curse all in one, because thankfully we haven't had to pay rent. So that's great. We have been fortunate in that way, but also, you know, we don't necessarily have a space. So everything we're doing right now is out of our home if we're doing anything. And so we were clear about drawing lines in the sand in terms of like where we stand in some of the, you know, some of the big topics that are being talked about in the world right now. And we've never necessarily been as explicit. So that was one, I guess, change that we made to our website and things, just like being as explicit as we could be, as well as also we started a podcast. We started two podcasts. One of them was the idea of like what it means to listen to other people. Like it's an oral storytelling podcast, all on like a study of empathy, kind of like that's the idea of it. And so we like take like excerpts from different conversations from different people and put it together all around the same theme, kind of like This American Life-y, Beautiful Anonymous. Those are the two podcasts I normally compare it to. But we started that, which has been really fun because we've been able to like and have like a bunch of different voices as a part of it. We also started offering education virtually, and we did a 24-hour kind of like streaming session on Twitch. Yes, we did right at the beginning of COVID, which was fun. So those have been like our biggest projects right now, which is very different from where we were obviously the year prior, and not necessarily where we want to be forever. We also have talked a lot because I am actually working on getting my RDT, which is drama therapy license. I'm working on my master's right now for drama therapy. So we have also been just like focusing more on like, what does that mean if we were to even pivot further into like the drama therapy world, which we already have because of our foundation of empathy, but like doing more work around that. And we're still figuring it out because I don't think anybody's figured out 2020 or 2021 like what they're doing. We're all kind of flailing around as best as we can and flying by the seat of our pants. So we're still figuring it out. Definitely can't say that we have a solution, but we're trying our best to like hold our place to still be an equitable theater that prides themselves on empathy and pushes towards like the wellness of the people we work with and their mental health and the community's mental health too. I think that's really going to be another thing that's really going to be driving our force. We're hoping to do like some more like things that are accessible to everyone, like free things that are accessible to everybody, but also that comes with getting grants and fancy things that we currently don't have, so we'll see what happens. That was very long-winded, so hopefully there's some answers there.
No, thank you for that, and thank you for being vulnerable about how the adversity that COVID has really caused for lots of arts programs. Like I told you all earlier before we started, like we're an organization that really, really advocates for funding for the arts because it's important in all aspects, and political aspects and social aspects and personal well-being. And it's hard right now to be an artist in a pandemic. So especially an artist in this kind of medium in theater where you rely on that interface and that interaction. So,
well, it's kind of wild that, like, I mean, we're pretty lucky in that because we're a nonprofit. We don't, like Taylor said, we don't have to worry about just like keeping the lights on quite the same way. Like, we can operate in whatever way satisfies our mission. That as long as we're fulfilling our mission, we're still doing what we need to. So whereas a lot of other for-profit companies are really hurting because they just kind of were in the business of making money from their shows and using that money to pay their employees and to pay their rent and whatnot, and just kind of keep that cycle going. But again, that kind of goes back to, like, in the face of this pandemic, it kind of makes you reflect on, like, why are you doing this? And if it, the seeing companies that are already open, like, and putting on full performances, like, I mean, some places are doing it safer than others, but it's still, it's kind of shocking to me to, like, kind of be risking performers' lives in a certain way to kind of be doing this again already in the middle of a pandemic, because you need to be making money from your theater. And like, you're not even, yeah, and you're not even really making it in a way that's, I guess, in some ways, like, kind of worth it. I mean, everybody makes their choices to whether or not they're going to do it or not, but like, to have unpaid community members, like, performing in fucking Shrek the Musical or something, and that, like, in the middle of a pandemic, just to, like, just to say they did, like, what is that really giving back to society? I mean, look, everyone just wants to perform at a certain point, like, it's fine, like, yeah, we all want to scratch that itch again, but I don't know, for me it's just kind of the sobering thing of, like, what is the point of that? Like, why do this kind of work that, like, you would be doing already? Like, we've had this whole, like you said, we had this whole Black Lives Matter movement that we were all, you know, we all said that we were changing things and nothing was going to be the same again. But then we had the pandemic as well. That was also, like, kind of throwing everything back in our faces of, like, what we've done for the centuries, for decades, whatever. And so to just kind of try to force your way back to normal right now, it just kind of blows my mind. I feel like it's shocking to me to see people who are trying to just kind of do what they've always done, in the face of everything that should be making us think about what we can do differently.
Yeah, it can be disappointing. Also, we did not ask if we could curse on this. Are we allowed to?
Oh yeah, you did say AZ Uncensored, but that's different.
AZ Uncensored, so. Okay. Okay.
And then fucking Shrek the Musical. Like, I don't know if anyone's actually doing that, but, like, that's the kind of shit that people are putting up right now. Just like,
way we don't to need double to see, down.
We've seen 42nd Street. Like, for 80 years, people have been doing 42nd Street. We don't need another production of 42nd Street when people are, like, when 500,000 people are dead.
I think you're right on the nail there. Like, I think I don't know. What's really bothered me is to see even artists promote this sense of back to normalcy when, like you said, Tony, there's so many things happening in our world right now that scream that we don't need a sense of normalcy right now. And there's so many opportunities for change right now. Like, we're at this weird battleground with ourselves and with each other, where we're facing this decision of, like, what are the problems? Like, the problems are staring us down in the face about white supremacy and this anarchy that goes on at the Capitol, and just so many things that are happening that show us inequity and show us that, like, somebody who looks like me is living a totally different life than somebody who's white. And exactly. So it's just,
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're totally fine. But it's just, I agree. It's just crazy to me to be a person in the arts, where this has traditionally been used as a mode of creating conversation, to kind of dial back on that conversation to what we were most comfortable with.
For sure. And I just want to, like, clarify too, or specify too, that, like, I think a lot of people take that, these kind of, like, problems, and, like, looking at the inequity and stuff that's around us, and think that the change they need to make is to, like, do like really heavy shit instead. Like just do it, like kind of really lean into like, okay, well, if we can't do 42nd Street, we're gonna do Raisin in the Sun. And like, yes, obviously, like another great classic play, but again, it's a play that's been around for decades, and we don't need to face our problems quite so literally all the time. I think that people right now do still really need escapism, and they do still really need fun, and it's you can have both. You just need to find the people that the people who haven't had a chance to tell their story yet,
yeah,
who like, aren't August Wilson, who may have like this ridiculous, goofy like sci-fi comedy, but they're a black writer, so like why not still give them a chance to do that? You don't have to make them write about fucking like growing up in a ghetto or growing up in a gentrified area. Like
that's the thing that drives me so bonkers is that people are like stuck in this way of just like, this is what Broadway is though, like this is what theater should, like this is what we know theater to be. Then like why aren't we changing it? Like don't you see a problem? Like we are clearly like I don't know, it's this is like such a frustrating topic for a lot of people right now, so I'm getting frustrated too, like not obviously with either of you, just like with the state of the world. Like how are we using, like we've had this the year basically now, you know, we've had this year to reflect on all of the things that have happened in our lives basically. Like people, a lot of people right now have extra time on their hands and I don't know why, like after seeing this last year unfold the way that it has, we haven't chosen, like a lot of people or a lot of theater companies and artists are choosing to still not to move forward in the way that they at one point may have promised or may have never, you know, like maybe during the Black Lives Matter, during you, like I say it past tense because some people are acting like it is, and it's insane. It's like, oh, because you are getting bored of this because your life is was being inconvenienced, and now you're like, okay, well I guess I'm done because I'm too tired, my brain hurts. Like imagine all of the people that have been in the thick of it, like what are you thinking? Like it's just insane. And like that's me speaking as a like very white appearing Latinx artist. Like I'm like very I haven't experienced like the multitude of things other people have, and I still am able to reflect on a lot of the problematic shit that has happened. And it's insane that that's not a conversation that's happening. Like why are we still only doing plays from white playwrights, like yeah. White old men, like no, why? It's
just following the Broadway model at all anymore is kind of ridiculous. Like people are so obsessed with like kind of using Broadway as like the standard that people should be fitting up following, but Broadway is the reason that Cats was like running for like 30 years. Like Broadway can be wrong, like we can change, we can move forward.
Well, and I think that like
I agree. I think we get stuck in what's old and traditional is right. I think just like the Constitution, like Broadway could also be outdated, you know?
Yeah, oh, exactly.
100%. And there's so many good plays out there if people read them. Like they exist out there. Like I've been lucky enough to like read and had a little bit of time to read some extra like plays. There's these really great resources. If you've never heard of it, New Play Exchange has a plethora of scripts that you can go on. I think there is a membership fee to it as a reader, but it's really affordable. But you can literally access free plays on there. You can't perform them for free, obviously you should pay the playwrights and whatnot, but you can read them for free, and they're all of these amazing modern, you know, plays because they're playwrights from now, like and you can see stories written by people from literally anywhere, and I don't know, it's cool because like Tony said, like it's cool you can see, like you don't have to necessarily do trauma work. Like why are we doing trauma porn anyway? Like we shouldn't be doing trauma porn unless there's like a clear reason for it, but trauma porn
isn't, like, there isn't a clear reason. Like, you're just traumatizing actors and designers and the audience for no reason at all. Like, I don't know. Just, we need to read more and we need to do better as a community.
Yeah, I saw this, like, I saw this statement made by this individual. I think I, not to put myself, not to out myself.
That's a very safe way of saying what you're saying.
Yeah, not to out myself, but on TikTok, I heard this person say that, like, the best movement for change we can get in the entertainment and arts medium is just making it normal for seeing, like, a Black person walk down the street in a Hallmark movie, or, like, just, you know, like, just to get that, those sappy, like, Black love stories, or to get that, those, to get something that's just a normal, whatever you'd write for a white family, to be very similar for, like, we need comedy, we need to laugh, we don't need to cry about 12 Years a Slave anymore, we don't need that raisin in the sun, like you mentioned, like,
for sure. It's 2021, we know slavery is bad at this point. We've learned that lesson for the most part, I guess. Fuck us. But I think that the new frontier that we have to be going through now is finding those people who are not represented as well, and trying to find that middle ground between showing them, like, like you said, those normal situations that we have just made white the default for, or straight the default for, or cis the default for so long, and also just respecting and acknowledging what changes and what happens in the dynamic when we like mix that up, basically, because, like you said, like but like there could just be a stupid, sweet, poorly written romantic comedy on the on like cable TV for a Black couple as well, but also just like at a certain point acknowledging that, like, you can't just take the same script and give it to Black actors, because, like, there needs to be somebody who actually can, like, write believably for people that, like, don't think the same way as them or haven't been raised the same way as them. I think that that's a problem that we've seen still too, is that people think that they can just kind of do that colorblind casting where they just stick in, like,
a Black Ariel. We don't need a Black Ariel, exactly, or Black Annie.
Because you're not doing anything to make that, like, a Black Ariel, like, have any kind of meaning. You're literally just like, yeah, it's, I don't know. Yeah. You already know what, like, this is, I appreciate about this conversation is that it seems like we're all on the same page, but.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, I mean, not to change gears completely, but since we talked a little bit about funding, I think that's where a lot of the problems lie. And it's not, obviously it's not only the problems. There's a lot of problems in our community that we need to fix ourselves. Like, not ourselves, but, like, our community needs to do growth together, you know? But, like, in terms of funding, like, that's something that needs to exist a lot more. And there needs to be so much more money in the arts, because the arts are so powerful in so many different ways. They can be so healing for people and create such, like, amazing, like, conversations. They can help, you know, people with all kinds of different learning, like, learning abilities, depending on what they want. Like, Tony and I both have trained with arts, trained on arts integration, which is, like, using an art form to, like, teach, like, a STEM subject, basically. And doing that is, like, so powerful, and we should be doing more things like that, because it reaches all of these different students that you wouldn't necessarily always be able to reach in the classrooms. And that's why one of the reasons we talk about, like, us being, like, a learning theater is, like, that's something that we also, like, really care about, is being able to, like, use theater for education, because there's so much learning that could be had. And, like, instead of, you know, doing just, like, testing, standardized testing all the time, like, why are we not using the arts to, like, really affirm that our students are getting what the concepts that we're teaching in different ways, you know? Being more specific, like using theater for like reading comprehension is a really good tool. I love to use theater that way because you can like ensure that the student actually get, like you can like check on for understanding very clearly with it. And so like, I think that that's another conversation to be had is like, we're like, we don't have a lot of funding in education or the arts, and we need to, we desperately need to, because that's the only way we're going to be able to have the active change that we want to happen. I think a lot, at least the a lot of what some people want to happen, not everybody's on the same page there, you know, in terms of our goals.
Sorry, we've been like talking at you for 20 minutes on this subject.
No, you're
so patient with us.
No, you're fine. I love I think the part of being a great host is the power of listening. So I loved all your ideas that and your thoughts and your journey. I love that you've been able to share that with me today. And thank you for bringing it full circle, Taylor, to arts funding, because unfortunately, in Arizona, we're already kind of lacking in the we're lacking in the educational sector in terms of funding, in terms of support. And as we're starting to hear these movements like Red for Ed, Scream, like more arts funding, more support for teachers, we really need art and artists and people who are dedicated themselves to this life that is like, you know, the arts, to be at that forefront when we're kind of trying to bring up how we can improve our education system. And I love that you've been able to integrate the arts within an educational model, because, you know, these standardized basic learning systems that we're learning here in Arizona are not doing it.
They're for one type of student.
Type of student, and for people who are visual learners, for people who need that deeper comprehension. I struggle with that in school too. So like, I totally, you know, I understand it, and I'm glad that we were able to talk about that today.
I think what it comes out to, if I can like just on my end, like summarize one thing, is that I think that we just have to stop being okay with it. Like so much, I feel like the legislation and stuff gets away with underfunding education, underfunding the arts, because like we've been talking about, it's just the norm. Like people expect it. People get into teaching when they tell you that you're, you know, like when you're training to be a teacher and stuff, it's like, well, you know, it's a thankless job. You don't get paid for it. You do it out of love. And because they know that we love teaching and we love performing and we love doing art, they know that they don't have to pay us the same way. They don't have to give us the funding. And we just have to stop being okay with that.
Tony and I just left our full-time jobs as teachers, as theater teachers, this year because of all of this. And so this is also just like a very like sensitive little topic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, going back to COVID, it's like when they tell teachers that they need to get back in the classroom as soon as possible because they're doing it for the love. And if they love the kids, they would do it. I mean, we have to stop manipulating people with that love of what they do.
It's just like consent 101 too. Like, I think that that's the thing that we haven't talked about as much as as a nation, is like how we're not a consent driven nation, like in a lot of ways. And so I don't know, problematic. It can be very problematic.
No, yeah, we definitely manipulate, I think, our appreciation to these kids, to this work, as a method of not paying folks nearly as much as they should be paid. So
the whole community art scene, whether it be music or theater or whatever, like is built on the idea that you don't have to pay the people on the ground. You don't have to pay your performers, you know, for the most part in community theater, they don't expect to be paid. Like musicians, like don't expect to be paid much of anything at all if they like get to go perform at a venue or at like a festival or something like that.
Unless you're already a big name. The rich. Yeah. Like, unless you're like theater for the rich, which because is Broadway, or you know,
Coachella,
right? Right.
So, yeah, Hollywood. I think that we just have to stop being okay with that on the bottom. Like, yes, of course we should do what we love and we should like not deny ourselves opportunities if we want to take them. But I mean, the more complacent that we become with it, the more they'll get away with it.
I definitely agree. I definitely agree. Thank you. Thank you both for
thank you.
No. Thank you both for your ideas, for your thoughts, and for your dedication to this work. I do want to emphasize that you both are from Laughing Pig Theater. Do you all have like virtual workshops going on now with COVID? So
we did have some. We don't have any virtual workshops lined up right now at this moment. But we will have some stuff upcoming soon. So if you want more information about us, you can visit our website, laughingpigtheater.org. Laughing Pig
Follow Theater. Us on all the socials.
Yeah, so. Where it's all Laughing Pig Theater on everything. Theater, T-R-E.
Yeah. Theatre. Sign up for the newsletter. Like, if you want to figure out what we're doing, if you want to follow along with what we're doing as we go. We don't send a lot of emails out. We don't spam people. So sign up for the newsletter. You'll see all the opportunities and events that we have coming up. Right now we're in a little bit of a limbo space, but we have some ideas brewing to get back on track.
And our podcast. Check out our podcast too, Stereo Shoes, and trust me, you'll love it on all the podcasting things too. Thanks.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, yes, definitely. For those listening, definitely check it out. And thank you both for coming, for talking, for sharing your lives with me, sharing your frustrations with me. I'm glad we were all kind of had this this cathartic moment of similar points of view when it comes to lots of things. So
thank you so much for giving us this space, Madeline.
Yeah, anytime.
And for being so patient with
yeah
us.
Oh my god.
If there's anything I got, it's maybe not a lot of time but a lot of patience. But no, I love talking with you both. I love that we were able to have this very all around the way conversation. I think that's what makes it more vulnerable and more something that I find more intriguing rather than very structured mode of doing things. But I think that wraps up our session today. I thank you both for being here once again. And yes, once again, I am your host Madeline Slatton, and we've had Taylor and Tony here to shed light on working under COVID, on the going away from the archaic model of Broadway theater for the rich, and lots. We've gone through a lot today, so thank you both for that. And yeah, tune in next time.